accession number 23205, reel 3.
Tony Leek, reel 3.
We went back from Butte to the battalion base which Alistair Pearson had established at the edge of the Bois de Bavant woods, just beside the road from Touffreville to Bure. And then he took us through the woods and past this chateau building called Arab Dubois. It's a racing establishment, really. It's a sort of great manor house chateau place, to where we should were designed to have our first base, which was at the crossroads where there was a wood yard, where the road from Troarn to Eskerville met the road from Cabourg to Touffreville. And that's where it was intended that we had the first battalion base in the plan. And when we got halfway there, we met a large party of 8th Battalion men who'd been dropped on Ronville DZ instead of at Touffreville. And so our numbers were swelled considerably. And by the time we got to this woodyard place, we have over 300 men, and the stragglers were still coming in. And Alistair Pearson sent some of us down to the where the half tracks had been knocked out, and we unhitched the trailers and wheeled them back to the firm base at the woodyard, because they had the German weapons in, which could have been useful if we'd been attacked, because there's always shortage of ammunition and weapons in an assault like this. Anyway, we weren't attacked, and we got up there and we went down the road from this woodyard down to Touffreville. This is a different road, and we were in rather an exposed position, and it was a silly position to dig in anyway, because it was in, you know, there were no trees to cover us there. Anyway, we started digging, and then the Germans sent a truck up this road from Touffreville towards the woodyard, which was stopped by our fellows firing at them, and then it was realised that we have to get a better camouflage position than that, so we moved back to a position just a little bit, well, just maybe 100 or 200 yards nearer the woodyard, where we dug in and for the night, and strung anti-tank mines across the road in case they sent any vehicles up there, because these anti-tank grenades, I suppose you could call them, they're like a large book in size and flat, and the idea was you tie them together and then you could pull them across the road or pull them away if you wanted one of your own vehicles to go past. Anyway, we settled down, and by this time, of course, we were very, very tired, because we'd had no sleep since we were at the airfield. 24 hours, just about. And some of us were nodding off, and there was some firing, and we don't know whether it was a false alarm or what happened, but anyway, somebody said that the Germans were coming, but we didn't see any, so I don't know what happened then. But anyway, we're too tired to sleep for the rest of that night. Too frightened, I should say, to sleep for the rest of that night. And then we stayed in this position for about, that was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, for about 4 days. And the roads leading out from this woodyard, there were four roads, and the battalion had men covering all these four roads, and our B companies was the road down to Friville. And during that time, unfortunately, one of our own fellas, hadn't got a steel helmet, he turned his berry inside out, and they were black inside the linings, and he came through a hedge, and he was shot by one of our sergeants by mistake. He thought it was a German. So this fella was shot in the chest, and he died pretty rapidly. I mean, there was no hope for him. If he got a bullet there, I mean, it probably went through his heart. So we had to bury him. But during those days we were in that position, half of us were in the actually in the trenches there, and the other half were out on patrols all over the area, day and night. These patrols, you know what the patrols are, do you?
Could you describe them?
Well, a patrol is there's various sorts of patrol in the army. There's the sort of just a reconnaissance patrol, where you might just have a recce patrol, where you might just have a few men, or maybe just two or three going out just to observe what's happening. And then you have one that is a bit stronger for a specific purpose, like we had when we went down to inspect the Bringes. Well, there's enough of us to produce some fire if we met any opposition. That was a recce patrol. Or you can have what they call a fighting patrol, which could be anything. You could have about 60 people on it. And you went out, and if you met the opposition, you gave them a good bash. Now, they used to send out these patrols, mainly fighting patrols, around the area, day and night. And Alistair Pearson was so clever that the Germans believed we'd got three battalions in that area, not just one half-strength battalion. And I think you'll find this information will be confirmed by other people. My own opinion is that the first week was crucial in Normandy, or the first few days. At any time we could have been pushed back into the sea and liquidated. But if we'd had any other CO than Alistair Pearson, I think we'd have been annihilated, because we were the furthest inland, as I said, dropping, and we were the furthest inland with outposts of any of the 6th Airborne Division. Now,
which company were you in?
B. D-Day was the
6th of June.
It was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. On Friday, that'd be what? Tuesday, Wednesday. That'd be the 10th of June, wouldn't it? We packed up from the woodyard and went down to the brickworks at Sanneville. Now, this is near, not far from Tufraville. And we occupied the brickworks, and there was no opposition. The Jerrys might have been around, but they didn't attack us. Incredibly, they were still making bricks, the furnaces were going, and it was hot there in some of the kilns. Unless, it took a long time to cool down. And next morning we woke up and we were amazed. The 51st Highland Division had arrived. And they thought they were in. We, of course, moved around in the woods very silently without making any noise and talking quietly and all that sort of thing, sort of melted into the landscape. They arrived with all their transport, and they were stripped off to the waist, digging in, and as if they were out in the desert where they had been before. And they took over from us. And we went back to the woodyard area again. And the next day, we were surprised. They came back to the woodyard and beyond, nearer the coast, in retreat. Because, of course, the Jerrys had spotted them, D digging in, and no attempt at camouflage, no attempt at keeping quiet. And I don't know what happened to them then, but they we stayed in that position a bit. The line was getting sort of stabilised in it then, to a certain extent. But virtually, the 8th Battalion were surrounded by the Germans for until the Highland Division arrived on that on the Saturday.
Did you speak to any members of the 51 Div?
I can't remember. I don't think we did. We weren't sort of in close contact. They were just a field or two away, something like that. But they got a reputation out there for being... reputation for being the 50 worst division. That's what they called them. They'd, mind you, they'd had a lot of fighting in the desert in Italy, and I think they were, you know, they're worn out. But they have a, they had a different attitude in the infantry divisions to the, from the parachute troops.
In what way?
Well, they liked to make... They were sort of a bit plodding and noisy and a lot of transport, whereas our fellows were used to operating without any transport at all. That's why they managed to walk, go across the Falklands when the guards couldn't do it. They weren't fit. But so we were around that area for a bit, and we moved up the road then a little bit further north. I think some of the 51st Division must have taken over the Woodyard area itself. And we got some new positions about a mile up the road. And we got into the... It was near a brickworks, a different brickworks. I mean, it must have been good clay around there. On the ridge there, by the road from the Woodyard up to... towards Cabourg. The dates are marked on that map when the 8th Battalion were in it, and we dug in this place just at the well, a short distance from the road itself to the east of this. And on the 16th of June we were just getting ready to go out on a patrol when all hell was let loose, and the Germans attacked us with very, very fierce fire. We were in the slit trenches all day long, we couldn't get out, and they nearly overwhelmed us. And if it hadn't been for the our machine gunners, I think they would have done. And it really very, very severe action was that.
What happened to you in it?
Well, I was just stuck in this slit trench all day. I didn't see any Germans, but I mean, you couldn't move without drawing fire on yourself. So we just kept our heads down, hoped for the best. Anyway, we survived the day. And then next day, they decided to withdraw us from the... these positions, and the 7th Parabattalion took over from us, and we went down from the ridge down into the bottom to Eruvlet near Ronville. And that was the first time we saw the sea and Ronville with all the gliders on it. For all we know, I mean, we could have been isolated. Could have been isolated for a month. For all we knew about what was happening elsewhere, we heard, you know, machine gun fire going on, and we'd on the night of D-Day, we saw the gliders come in, because the second wave of gliders came in about 9 in the evening at dusk, or towards dusk, and it was an awesome sight, because there were 250 gliders and 250 aircraft tugging them. The sky was filled with aircraft. We saw that, but we didn't see them landing because we couldn't for the trees being on the ridge. And anyway, that was a very successful landing. They had very few casualties, and it made the Germans were trying to push through to the coast to drive a wedge into the British forces, but they didn't succeed. They turned tail when they saw all this lot. Well, imagine it, can't you? 500 aircraft in the sky almost at once, or one wave after another. So we went down to this Arouvillette place, and we were there, and it was quite quiet compared with where we'd been, and we got a bit of shelling and that sort of thing, but nothing much happened then. And we moved around that area of Ranville, and spent a bit of time on the banks of all the River Orne, so-called rest area. And then we had to go back up to the ridge again, because what the we at that time it had developed into a sort of static warfare, and we were holding the line. Now the line is not like it was in World War One, where it was a continuous line of trenches. The front line was a series of outposts, maybe one here and another one a quarter of a mile away, and in between we could infiltrate the German positions and they could infiltrate ours. But I think people would imagine, it was a continuous sort of line with barbed wire and trenches, but nothing like that. And then we went from Arouvillette. That would be about. We were up and down a bit to the ridge. I'd have to refer to my notes to find out exactly when. But on the 2nd of July, I know, we were down in the so-called rest area on the banks of the River Orne, towards the sea, and I heard some Beaufort's anti-aircraft guns firing off, and I looked and I saw this plane approaching, and little lights were flashing on the front of the wing, and it dawned on me, he was firing at us. Next minute, a cannon shell exploded just by me and hit a. I jumped into a slit trench, and then this poor man fell in on top of me, being hit in the stomach by the cannon shell, and all his intestines fell out, and he died. I mean, it was a horrible sight. And so that was a very near do. All I got was a bit of shrapnel in my hand. Very lucky. So-called rest area. We kept going up and down to the positions because it was all static. They used to send out small patrols to, but they didn't do very much. And of course, they had to be much more careful then by then, because all the area had been mined and barbed wire in places and so on. We used to do about a week or so in the line and then come out for a rest. And we used to exchange positions usually with the 7th Parabattalion. And this went on, nothing very eventful went on. I mean, you got shelling all the time, mortaring. Until the middle of August, and then there was this Battle of the Falaise Gap when the German troops got trapped. You know perhaps about it in the Battle of Normandy. The Americans came from the south and we went from the north, and a lot of them escaped, and they were pulling back to the River Seine, and we had to follow them up. We'd been all ready for it because it was expected, and we'd done a bit of marching, but our feet were in a terrible condition, wearing your boots in summer for weeks on end, your feet get very soft and sore. And it was never wise when you any time to take your boots off, because you never knew what was going to happen. Certainly when you were in the forward positions in the front line, you never took them off, except maybe to wash your feet, but you didn't take them off to sleep in socks. And so we were told that they pulled out the Germans, so we went down this same road we'd gone on D-Day from Toufreville to Buer. And the Germans had been in Buer all the time for the whole of June, July and half of August. The village was pretty badly damaged by shelling, and the bridges were still blown, but we could, the river wasn't very deep there, and I don't think it's any wider than the road down here, and you could cross on the old broken bridge, on the blown up bridges. You could get it, a man could get across, although a real couldn't, of course. And we went across the marshes, which had been flooded before D-Day, and onto the main road that went from Troarn towards Rouen. And they sent me ahead as what they called the leading scout. I was still only an ordinary private soldier, carried a rifle, ahead of the others to bash on until we met opposition. And we just came, this road was dead straight for about 2 miles, and as came to the end of it, as it rose up a bit, bang, and something hit me. I thought they'd thrown a grenade. I feel that I'd been kicked in the bottom. So I jumped into the ditch at the side of the road, hoping it wouldn't be mined, and it wasn't, and lay very still, because I didn't know what had happened. And in case the... And another go at me and tried to finish me off. I didn't know I'd been shot. I thought I'd had a grenade thrown at me. And anyway, whilst I was lying there, one of our platoons came up, and the officer in charge was not one of our airborne people, because a lot of them had been killed or wounded, and they'd drafted ordinary infantry soldiers to the parachute battalions. They got about 100 each with officers, and this officer was not as experienced as the para officers. And he said to the sergeant, platoon sergeant, he said, "Oh, I must go and help that man." And the platoon sergeant and the other said, "Don't go, sir, you'll be shot." But he took no notice, and he went to help me, and a sniper shot him dead. And I was all right. I mean, I wasn't badly injured. And then a bit later, the whole lot moved on, and I crawled through the hedge, and the medics, they had four RAMC men with each of the para-battalion companies. And they patched me up, and I was able to walk back to the regimental aid post about half a mile down. What had happened was I'd been shot, not, it wasn't a grenade. I'd had I got a burst of machine gun fire through my smock at the bottom, the long camouflage jacket, through there.
Through the inside of your thigh?
Like that. Very lucky. Nearly lost everything, all my equipment, and if it'd gone a bit to one side or up, I'd have been dead. Three bullets. And I know, because I saw the bullet holes in my smock afterwards, and I was amazed. And it was a very near do with that. But I mean, it was so sad, because I wasn't, it took a piece of flesh out of my bottom, but I mean, that was nothing. But the poor fellow who went to my help was killed, and I survived.
What was the date of this?
17th of August. We had three officers shot that day. I think they were all shot by snipers, because the infantry officers dressed differently from us. They didn't give them smocks or anything. They still wore their infantry uniforms, which is a bit peculiar. I mean, I don't see why they couldn't have got them some smocks. But and then I thought, well, it put me out of action for a bit. It's not a bad wound, but then. And they sent me to Bayeux to one of the field hospitals there.
What kind of treatment did you get from them?
Well, they were so busy they got practically none, because there were all these German wounded from the Falaise Gap. I mean, they didn't have a toothbrush, I barely had a wash, and we got fed, you know. But they weren't able to give any proper nursing care. They were so busy with people who were really badly injured. And so they kept me there for about a week, and I thought, well, you know, I'll be back to my unit before long. But, oh no, they had to clear all the casualties out of Normandy to make room for the hospital, field hospitals for more. And I came back on a tank landing ship, because these ships were equipped to take tanks out, or large vehicles, with a ramp. And come and down the side of these boats, they had had racks for stretchers. They put me on a stretcher. I collapsed a bit on the way to the hospital. I think it was just general tiredness and fatigue. I didn't lose much blood or anything like that. And I got back to England, to Portsmouth, and then I went on a train to... you see, you lived at Woking?
Yes.
The Botley's Park War. This Park Hospital there, is it somewhere like that?
Botley is near Eastleigh.
Oh, is it nearer that way? Anyway, this was Botley Park War Hospital. It was another EMS like Joyce worked at. And I was there for about a week, and then they sent me to Newcastle. I was in the main hospital there, the infirmary at Newcastle, and then I went to North Shields for a bit. I mean, I was convalescent, and the doctors were very kind. They didn't rush me back to my unit, although, I mean, it healed up all right, and I went back to the 8th Battalion in October.
Did you have to have antibiotics?
They didn't have much in the way of antibiotics in those days. They had penicillin for the more severely wounded. It was just coming in then, and... they used to give them sulfonamides, which were used extensively in medicine before the antibiotics became more available. They don't use them now because they have toxic effects. Not severe toxic effects, but you don't feel very well when you're taking them. And it healed up all right, and back to 8th Battalion in October. So they made the job when I got back to the company. They made me the company clerk, which was quite an easy job, really. Just the sort of administrative stuff, you know, typing and that. And then we went to, at Christmas 1944, there was a flap on because the Germans had broken through in the Ardennes. And we put it to short notice to go there. So instead of having Christmas in England, we got ready to go back to Europe again, because the reason for this was that they were so short of troops that the 6th Airborne, was a strategic reserve of the British Army. They had no other divisions to send. And the 1st Airborne Division had been annihilated at Arnhem, so we had to go.
Tony Leake, Real Form.
I'm okay now.
Yes.
Right. So, on Christmas Eve, we went to Dover. We had a Christmas dinner there. Oh no, wait a minute. Yes, we had one before we left at that time we were at a place near Bath called Corsham, instead of Tilshead. We had a Christmas dinner there before we went. We got to Dover, it was Christmas Eve, and they gave us another one there.